Welcome to the Thyroid Fixer podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Amy, and we're diving deep into the world of hormones, especially for all you fierce women in perimenopause and menopause, and anyone dealing with hypothyroidism. If you're struggling with weight gain, you feel like shedding those pounds is an impossible feat. If you're dealing with plummeting energy levels, gut-wrenching fatigue, or a libido that seems to have left town, then you're in the right place. And don't even get me started on the hair loss. If these symptoms are sounding all too familiar, you found your tribe. Welcome, because my goal is to educate, empower, and shake up your world. I want you to embrace every inch of that badass woman that you truly are. So if you're ready to dive in and fix things, let's get started. You want to know my number one hack for improving my focus, my brain, my energy, and my metabolism? It's jumping in my cold plunge 3-4 times a week, because studies show that 11 minutes of cold exposure per week improves your mood, speeds up recovery time from hard workouts, enhances your metabolism, reduces stress, and definitely you will see improvements if you're tracking your sleep, or even if you're just noticing that you're sleeping better, you will see improvements in your sleep quality. Personally, I have seen just a huge, huge impact in all of those markers in my life since regularly using my Culture cold plunge. So what you want to do if you want all these benefits too, you're going to go to culture.com, culdture.com/Dr. Amy, D-R-A-M-I-E. That's going to save you $200, and that's a huge savings. This tub is so easy to use, easy to put together. You are going to love having it right there for you. You jump in, you do your breathing. I promise you there are benefits galore. Oh, did we even mention the brown fat? Browning your adipose tissue. What does that do? Speeds up your metabolism as well. So go to culture.com/Dr. Amy and grab yours. Let me know how it goes. Let me know about all those improvements that you see. So this is going to be a game changer for you, and you can probably hear the excitement in my voice. The latest introduction, the latest member of the family to the Fixer line is Metabolism Fixer. And this, oh my God, I formulated this just for all my people out there that need to lose weight, that need help in the weight loss department, that can't lose weight no matter what they do, that feel like they have a slow metabolism. And it might be thinking of trying all those peptides out there, you know, the Beverly Hills soccer mom drug of choice for weight loss peptides. Or even if you're on them already and you're like, man, these are really expensive and I'm still not losing weight, add in Metabolism Fixer. Here's what I did. I took the power of T2, which increases your basal metabolic rate while you are sitting there watching Netflix. You're burning fat while you're watching Netflix. I combined it with a very unique patented ingredient called Suppressa. Suppressa has multiple clinical trials backing its efficacy in reducing your appetite, decreasing snacking, and providing way more control over your food intake. It is amazing. We also see improved emotional well-being, just decreased food cravings all around, reduced hunger, and weight management. Add on top of that, we have green tea extract, we have purple forest purple tea extract, both of which affect the metabolism in a very positive way without the jitters of normal fat burning supplements out there from the 1980s and 90s, right? The ones that made you feel like you're having a heart attack. You will not have that in any of my supplements, Thyroid Fixer or Metabolism Fixer. But Metabolism Fixer, we kicked it up a notch. It is in powder form, so you can drink it through your day. It's going to flavor your water. We got orange crush and refreshing citrus. I love them both. It is going to keep you under control all day long. So you throw a couple scoops in your water bottle in the morning, throw a scoop or two in your water bottle throughout the day. You will have fat burning and appetite control the entire day for what? An eighth of a price of the peptides? Oh my God, you can't go wrong. So grab some Metabolism Fixer today. please let me know how you do on it. I'm super excited for you. Super excited.
We have not done an episode lately where I've answered your questions. And this is one of my favorite topics to do because they're your questions. So today's episode is going to be nothing but all of your questions posted in the Girl Fix Your Thyroid Facebook group, which if you're not a part of, I highly recommend you go over and join because this is where you can ask questions and I answer. You can post your labs and you get answers. And the community, oh my God, the community itself is 11K large now and amazing. I feel like I've handpicked everyone in there. Have you ever been in a Facebook group where you're like, oh my gosh, all these people in here are just selling multi-level marketing products, or they're giving really, really bad advice, like really bad, or they're just in there complaining? That is not what the Girl Fix Your Thyroid Facebook group is. In there, we love each other. We support each other. We help each other. And if there is somebody in there trying to push some MLM product, they're getting to boot. So we are in there doing nothing but improving thyroid, improving hormones as much as we possibly can as a group. Now, sometimes you need a little bit of extra help. And that's why I do what I do. That's why I have a team that can prescribe to all 50 states because I realize that is needed. But I wanted ultimately a place where I could be in there supporting and giving advice as much as I possibly could. So doing a podcast like this, a big Q&A, is kind of like a mass way that I can answer multiple questions. And I guarantee you some of these questions I see in here are ones that have popped up before from other people. So listen to this episode because someone else's question might be your question too. All right. One theme that I see a lot of, this is a big, big, big question. Why am I gaining weight on keto? I hear this a lot. So here's the thing. When you're doing keto, if you're doing dirty keto, or really, I mean, I think we've even gotten away from that a little bit. Even if you're not doing dirty keto, if you're doing just all the fat that you can possibly consume and you're all excited about keto because you can do bacon and you can do cheese and heavy whipping cream and more cheese and casseroles with cheese and three different kinds of cream cheese, all of that high fat dairy. And even, I mean, listen, you might say, well, I'm not doing dairy. Okay. Yeah. But you're doing almond flour and nut butters and you're using a ton of Kerrygold butter, which is great unless you use half of a stick to cook with. You're using a boatload of fat, and fat is still 9 calories per gram. You're not going to get away from basic math. And, you know, the calories in, calories out argument, we could do a whole podcast on that. If you go back and listen to my podcast with Dr. Lane Norton, he really breaks it down, really breaks it down. I have another podcast coming up that I interview Lila Brada. For those of you who don't know who he is, he's an OG in the biohacking space, in the powerlifting space. He is one of the original, I guess, top level bodybuilders that I remember from back in my day in the, what would that be? Late 90s, early 2000s. And he started and well, still to this day owns Labrada Nutrition, which I worked for at one point in time. And he even says on this podcast, calories do matter. They matter. So if you are taking in more energy, i.e. calories, if you're taking in more calories than what you're using up for energy, that's going to result in weight gain. So it doesn't matter that your carbs are at zero. If your calories are at 3,000 and you, between your basal metabolic rate and exercise and movement and all that added up, you're only burning 2,000, then that's going to be a problem. You're going to put on weight. So most of the weight gain in keto doesn't come from eating 3 chicken breasts and a steak. It's coming from adding all that excess fat because it's allowed on keto and the treats are so good, right? Oh my goodness. Oh, and then we have the keto products because they're labeled low carb and they're labeled keto. And so we add them in and in our minds, am I talking to you right now? In our minds, you know who you are because I've done this. We think this is healthy. This is low carb, but we don't equate in our minds when we're trying to justify snacking on keto chocolate chip cookies and keto peanut butter cups because it's labeled keto on the package. we try to justify in our minds that it's okay. I literally, I kid you not, I'm at a conference. I'm away. I'm recording this away behind me. So I ordered Instacart. So whenever I travel, I always order Instacart or Whole Foods and have stuff delivered to my hotel room so I can snack on healthy things and I can eat my own breakfast and I'm not tempted by the pastries and all that or the powdered eggs that aren't really eggs. So literally behind me, I bought, so I would have something sweet at the end of the day, Quest peanut butter cups. And of course on there, they say, you know, less than one net carb. Okay. Well, we all know that you can't go by net carbs. You got to go by total carbs. So there are five carbs in each little tiny, it looks like a Reese peanut butter cup mini, but it's a Quest mini peanut butter cup. So 5 grams of carbs in each one. That's what you have to count. Now, could I easily down that whole bag? Yeah, because in my mind, it's keto and it's low carb and it's less than 1 gram of sugar or less than one carb or whatever. It's the marketing. It's the marketing. It's the marketing that pulls us in and then we tend to overdo it. So if you're in that category, really be careful of keto or low carb labeled foods because those tend to add up in calories big time. You know, keto granola, they're putting coconut flakes and they're using xylitol, which totally blows you up, blows your stomach up. At least it does mine. And then you're taking in all these calories and fat. So that is why people will gain weight on keto. Now, why will glucose start creeping up on keto? Well, here's the thing. With glucose, you have to remember that glucose can lie. Glucose is that immediate response to whatever. So it's the immediate response to what you're eating. And glucose will go up. But what we really want to measure is your hemoglobin A1C and your insulin. Because those two markers are going to tell us, number one, A1C, what's your glucose been doing over the last 3 months? If that A1C is going up, you have been spiking your glucose, maybe through food, maybe through stress, maybe through not sleeping, elevated cortisol, whatever, but you've been spiking your glucose. Insulin is a separate marker. So I have seen people with totally optimal levels of A1C and then elevated insulin. So that is insulin resistance. Now, why would insulin resistance go up on keto or why would insulin go up on keto? I would say the stress of doing it. Maybe you are putting your body under stress. Maybe you're intermittent fasting too long. Maybe you're not getting enough protein. Sometimes that can trigger that spike in insulin. And even going back to glucose, we can see a spike in glucose on keto when people overconsume protein. Now, I never thought I would actually say that because most of y'all underconsume protein, but there is a breaking point. So there was one point in time where I had a bodybuilding coach and he put me on 200 grams of protein. I gained weight because it was way too much protein for my body. Gluconeogenesis occurs and it gets converted into sugar. So yes, your glucose can go up if you spike your cortisol, if you put your body under stress, if you eat too many grams of protein, like way too many. Like I'm talking probably 200, right? 180, 200. If you stay in the 1 gram of protein per lean pound of body mass. So let's say you're 180 pounds and you want to be 140, 150 as your fighting weight. Eat 140 grams of protein. Now you might not always hit that every single day, but if you hit it kind of most of the time and maybe 120 for the other times, that is a win. Now, another question I have tied to this, how can you improve protein absorption if you're eating over 150 grams per day and you're still under range? So this is from Lisa. And Lisa, I'm going to address you directly. The other questions were kind of a conglomeration from a multitude of people. But first of all, Lisa, if you are at or slightly above 150 grams per day, I would say that is freaking amazing. What you can do, well, number one, my question would be, how do you know you're not absorbing it? And number two, how are you taking that in? So there's a variety of different ways that we can really make sure our protein is being absorbed. And there's a couple of different studies that we have to look at as well. So let's break it down. One study does show, and I talked about this in the podcast I did with Betty Murray, probably a year or so ago. So you're going to have to go back in the archives. But we referenced a study that shows that women respond very well when protein is bookended, meaning you taking a larger amount of protein in the morning, taking a larger amount of protein at the end of the day, kind of sprinkling your protein throughout the middle of the day. And it's very well absorbed, even protein intakes at 50 grams. So 50 grams in the morning, 50 at the end of the day, there's your 100. And then you sprinkle them in throughout the middle of the day. There's your, you know, 120 to 150. And that those bookended protein feedings are very well tolerated, specifically by women, actually. Now, the other theory is, let's say you have GI issues, you have dysbiosis, you have something where you're celiac, where you just don't absorb food very well. And in celiac, we normally see low amino acids because of the low absorption and the damage to the small intestine. So for those people, if you fall into that category, I would say, and this is where I will break out of my, you know, eat three meals plus maybe one snack. Let's not be cows and graze all day. In that instance, I would say maybe you eat more mini meals. So if you break down, you take in, let's say, 20 grams of protein over the course of 6 to 7 meals, maybe that well, in your case, if you're taking 150, it would be over 20 grams, maybe 25 grams of protein over 6 to 7 meals. And that way your body is utilizing it. And then yes, in the interim, I would put in some chelation aminos, any type of really good amino acid, but I like chelation. So you could do that. But I'm wondering why you think that it's not being absorbed, because it's kind of really hard to tell when you're not absorbing protein. I mean, I guess you could be breaking down muscle or losing muscle, something like that. But if you were, then I would go back and ask you, well, if you're eating all this protein, but you feel like you're losing muscle, are you lifting heavy? Are you taking a GLP that could be wasting your muscle tissue? That's another issue. So we have to look at the why, but that is my in general answer to your question. Okay, Aaron, this is a question that I'm pretty sure every one of us has experienced at one point in time and wondered, what in the hell is going on with my body? Is it normal to retain up to 7 pounds overnight? And then she asked, are diuretics safe? I'm assuming to get, you know, kind of rid of those 7 pounds overnight. So yes. Welcome to hypothyroidism. Oh, and hormonal imbalance too. So yes, and being a woman, there's that. So yes, we can easily retain 7 pounds of water, easily. Carbohydrates are the biggest, we'll say, source of water retention, because carbs hold water. And then also remember, any kind of stress is going to hold water. If you spike your glucose and your insulin, you're going to retain water. So kind of very easy to do. And then add on top of that, you have a slow metabolism and slow gastric motility and even slow circulation. That's going to affect water retention. So if you're, let's say, not drinking enough water and you had some sushi for dinner, which is carbs and some salt, easily retaining 7 pounds of water, maybe 10. Everything is slowed down. Your body can't push that water out. Now, add on top of that, what if you're not drinking enough water? So our body will actually retain water when we're not drinking enough. That's why when I was getting ready for a bodybuilding show or even a photo shoot, I would load water. I would water load. So I would go 1 to 2 gallons that week of the show or the photo shoot. And then I would drop it down, because my body would get so used to flushing out 2 gallons of water, and it would do it very effectively. Like even with those 2 gallons, and actually nowadays, competitors no longer water drop. So when you take in that 2 gallons, you'll notice that you lose a lot of water. So even with those 2 gallons per day, or even at 1 gallon per day, I was quote unquote shredded, because that's what we say. Well, you're shredded. Yeah, I could see the striations in my muscles because my body fat was low and I had no water retention blurring the muscle fibers. So ultimately, you know, as a competitor, we want to be dry. There's another term for you. You want to come in dry, and you don't want to spill over. So if you spill over, that means that all that water retention is coming back. It's coming back. And sometimes you will spill over, and we'll see this happen more with guys, because guys get super shredded. Bodybuilders, professional especially, super shredded. And then like they looked fantastic the day before the show. And the day of the show, when they stand on stage, they look soft and squishy. It's because they potentially dropped their water too much and their body started to rebound and retain water, or they took in, ready for this, carbohydrates, because that's what bodybuilders will do before stepping on stage to pump up. The theory being that those carbs are going to increase your glucose and your insulin is going to shuttle nutrients and water into the muscle cell and pump it up, like poof it up. Because you might also look, here's another term, flat. So you might look kind of flat, like where your muscles are deflated. So you want to add in those carbohydrates to pump them up. It's a whole science, and science is always changing too. So I might be talking about literally like old school ways of getting ready for a show. So when you eat those carbohydrates, a lot of times bodybuilders will eat rice cakes. Oh, I love me and the rice cakes and the peanut butter. Oh, I put a banana on top of it. And after being so deprived for 12 weeks, it was so good. So they'll eat some rice cakes or baby food because that's a really quick sugar. And then sometimes they'll get spillover. So there is the answer to your question. Could be carbohydrates. I mean, using bodybuilders is a perfect example because we can look so intricately at the science of what the body does. Eating the carbohydrates, not drinking enough water will make your body retain fluid, but also just being hypothyroid. And it kind of sucks. You can take a diuretic. So, you know, like dandelion root is really good. That's a natural diuretic. But with any diuretic, you don't want to take it for extended periods of time because it will actually slow down your metabolism. You want to be careful with the diuretics, and they will have a rebound effect too. So it's not that diuretics are bad for Hashimoto's, it's that they're bad for anybody doing it for an extended period of time.
You take high doses of magnesium, God forbid, calcium or zinc. If so, you might actually be creating imbalance in your body and not supporting it. Minerals are great for you. Don't get me wrong. And most of us don't get enough. In fact, a 2022 study by the CDC found that more than 97% of Americans are mineral deficient. That's basically everyone. So taking a mineral supplement is a good idea. But the trouble is that your body almost never uses one mineral at a time. Minerals work together. They work in pairs or groups, and taking high doses of just one mineral, that can actually cause you to deplete other minerals, leading to bigger problems down the line. So this is why I love Beam Minerals. They make a full spectrum mineral supplement that gives you every essential mineral your body needs in the right ratios with close to 100% bioavailability. Beam Minerals restores all your minerals at once, so you don't have to worry about mineral imbalances. And then best of all, you can take Beam Minerals in about 30 seconds a day. That's a 1 ounce shot. Boom, slam it down. So you don't have to worry about a cabinet full of pills and powders. And don't worry, it does taste like water, actually. So replenish your mineral store is the easy way. Head to www.beamminerals, BEAMMINERALS.com and use the code Dr. Amy for 20% off your first order. Okay, best supplement for liver detox and how much of a role the liver plays in eliminating and processing estrogen and balancing glucose. Okay, so for ongoing liver support, this is where I add in my liver fixer. This is one that I tell people just go on it every day for a month, especially if your liver enzymes, your ALT and AST is starting to creep up. We really like that around like an 18, 15, 18 in the teens. Once it starts creeping up, we want to give our liver support because our liver does so many, over 500 metabolic functions. So we need to love on our liver. And the liver is responsible for, yes, our metabolism, for processing hormones, for processing supplements, for processing toxins. I mean, everything that we come in contact with, even if it's a prescription medication or a hormone, has to pass through and be processed by the liver. So yes, needless to say, it's one of the most important organ, especially for having a metabolism. Now, if we have something called non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, this is more closely related. Now, it can be tied back to hypothyroidism because we know with hypothyroidism, there is elevated insulin and glucose. But non-alcoholic fatty liver disease is often connected to too much sugar, just that processed sugar, processed carbohydrates, too many carbs. And then we will see fat buildup, but it's essentially sugar buildup in the liver. And that's even why when someone goes keto, kind of circling back to that first question, when somebody goes keto, they will find that oftentimes
their liver enzymes go up. Now, this can also relate back to that first question of why did my glucose go up when I'm doing keto? Well, you're also, your liver is going to dump sugar when it's not being bombarded by that sugar. So let's say you were a sugar burner, meaning you weren't doing keto before, you're insulin resistant, you're eating kind of a lot of carbohydrates, maybe even just a boatload of fruit because you thought fruit was good for you. I mean, it is, but not in excess. So you're eating a boatload of carbs and then you decide to do keto, or your labs come back and someone's like, hey, you really need to cut those carbs. Now you have a non-alcoholic fatty liver. That liver is going to dump, essentially, these are all layman's explanations. It's going to dump the sugar into your system, thus elevating the glucose. So that can totally happen. Next question. Questions about resting metabolic rate and thyroid hormone replacement dosing. I.e., if you are in athletic condition, do you need to increase your thyroid hormone replacement therapy dose? Do you burn through your meds and need an adjustment? Okay. So this is kind of, I wish you were here so I could ask you questions, Alicia. So first of all, when we are replacing thyroid hormones, we're using thyroid hormone replacement on you. We are not going to do it just based on your labs. You are more than a lab value. So at the end of the day, I'm going to say, how do you feel? How do you feel? Because that is the most important thing to me. I'm not going to increase your thyroid medication just because your T3 says 3.1 or 2.9. If you're standing there in front of me saying, listen, I look great, I feel great, I'm an athlete, I'm strong, I got low body fat, my energy's good, my brain functions, I'm good. I'm going to leave you right there. We're not going to change your thyroid medication. But now if you're standing there in front of me with a 2.9 free T3 and you're like, yep, I just put on 5 pounds. I want to take a nap at 2 p.m. in the afternoon. Can't think straight. Just no energy. Then yeah, of course, we're going to increase your thyroid med dose. So it's not that you have to go higher just because you're active. We would go higher to address symptoms and or labs. Now, if you're an athlete and you're active and you feel like you are kind of burning through your medication, then you would have symptoms to accompany that. You know, my theory, and I've stated this before on other podcasts, is that those who are type A, use their brain, use their bodies, drivers, athletes, entrepreneurs, those go, 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 go people tend to need a little bit higher dose of T3. Now, this has not been proven. This is a total, total hypothesis on my part with absolutely no studies backing it at all. But this is just anecdotally what I've seen in working with people, is that there seems to be a theme. Now, you're always going to have an outlier. You're always going to have, don't feel bad if you're a type A and you're like, oh my God, I can't make it past 20 micrograms of T3. It's okay. It's all about individualization, personalization of your dose. So don't get stressed out about that. Holly, you're asking, can Hashimoto's be caused by a virus like chronic Lyme or EBV that has settled into the thyroid to attack its tissues? Is Hashi a root cause, or is there a root cause for Hashi? I love it. I love it. All right, Holly. You know, this is kind of a thorn in my side. So here's the thing. I say this a lot, but it's definitely bears repeating. I have yet to find someone that doesn't have Epstein-Barr virus. I mean, I kid you not. Thousands of labs. I've never seen, here's a double negative for you. I've never seen a negative, like, hey, this person, no indication of Epstein-Barr. None. Haven't seen it. Still waiting for him. Still waiting for that person. So Epstein-Barr virus is definitely connected to Hashimoto's. But we cannot say that every person with EBV has Hashimoto's, because then every person in the world would have Hashimoto's, because pretty much every person in the world has EBV. So it's really hard to make that correlation. And I really don't buy into, and hold on, I'll get on my high horse here in a second. I really don't buy into the theory that a virus settles in your thyroid. It's in your body. It's in your body. We draw your blood and we test for Epstein-Barr virus. We test for Lyme disease. It's in your bloodstream. It's systemic. It's all through your body. It doesn't like cozy up and say, hey, this thyroid looks like a good place to set up camp and stay for a couple of years. Like, no. Now, what viruses will do, like Lyme disease or Epstein-Barr virus, that can be a stressor on the body to turn on that Hashimoto switch. So, you know, I mean, with all autoimmune conditions, three-legged stool, you have that genetic predisposition. You have a usually leaky gut and a trigger. If that trigger is a viral load, then it can turn that genetic predisposition propensity for Hashimoto's that is currently in the off position, can turn that to the on position. But so can pregnancy. So can menopause and perimenopause. It's any kind of stressor. So yeah, Epstein-Barr virus definitely could. It's interesting when people come to me and say, what's the root cause of my Hashimoto's? And I always say it's the other way around. Hashimoto's or hypothyroidism is the root cause for your weight gain, your constipation, your fatigue, your hair loss, your cold intolerance, your brain fog, dot, dot, dot. So it's not that there's a root cause for Hashimoto's. I mean, are we going to say pregnancy is the root cause for Hashimoto's? Don't anybody get pregnant because that's going to flip that switch. I mean, no. We can't say that EBV is a root cause. It's a contributor that can flip the switch, but something's going to flip it. So if the EBV didn't flip it, then pregnancy would, then perimenopause would, then menopause would, then that stressor would, then overdieting would, and overexercising would, and that move halfway across the country would, and the divorce, and the any of the above can trigger Hashimoto's, can turn that switch on. Now, my high horse that I'm going to climb onto right now are the practitioners out there that claim that they can fix or heal your thyroid just by addressing your Epstein-Barr virus or your Lyme or your mold, your heavy metals. No, it's not going to happen. I mean, if you fall for that, you're going to waste money and you are going to be disappointed and frustrated at the end. And then you're going to spend more money at the other end after you wasted that money on their program, promising results you're not going to get. It's going to help. I mean, hey, maybe you'll feel better for sure. And sometimes people have really bad chronic Lyme and that treatment needs to be paired up with thyroid and hormone treatment. But I've had many experts on the show and I've had them back me on this. Well, I didn't even have them back me. They just did. They said it. And I was like, yay, somebody's actually saying something that I have said all along. Thank you. That when your body is shored up, when you're taking care of yourself, when your thyroid's optimized, when your hormones are optimized, you will be able to withstand the onslaught of mold and mycotoxins and heavy metals and Epstein-Barr virus and Lyme disease and the five other tick-borne illnesses that I test positive for that don't ever bother me. Yes, I have EBV. I have Lyme. I have Babesia and Duncani. I guarantee you I have mercury toxicity too. I mean, come on. But it doesn't bother me. I don't have symptoms. It's because my body is shored up. So please don't fall prey to those marketing schemes either. Okay, I'll get down off my high horse now. Dina, is there a way to rid thyroid nodules of HURL cells that are believed to be benign? So listen to the podcast I just did with Dr. David Brownstein. Iodine is absolutely amazing. Cancer prevention and nodule reduction. Amazing, amazing, amazing. Oh, you guys' questions are also amazing. I love you. Can the symptoms of low estradiol and hypothyroidism be kind of, you know, correlated, confused, correlated? So yeah, I mean, there's so many things that can be overlapping. So we know low ferritin mimics low thyroid. Low estradiol kind of is more unique a little bit. So with low estradiol, yeah, you can get brain fog. Yep, you can get hair loss. Absolutely, you can get weight gain or inability to lose weight. Weight gain around the midsection. But then you're going to kind of get the hot flashes and the night sweats and the dry vagina. That's really more estrogen related, not so much thyroid related. I mean, some people will get hot when we start optimizing their thyroid and their metabolism kicks in, but they're not going to get like a hot flash or night sweats from it. So kind of similar symptoms, but not really. Let's just test, right? Let's test. So we know that estradiol is protective when estradiol is above 50, but we really want a little bit higher because that's going to give you the relief from the symptoms of perimenopause and menopause. So we just want to test. And same thing with thyroid. Test, don't guess. Let's look at it all.
All right. We got time for a couple more. Brittany, new follower here. Love to have you on here, Brittany. Love it. I'm sorry if this has been covered, but my doctor has me on Levo only. You say I have to have T3. I had my labs redone testing everything. They came back with a low T3. I'm now on 75 micrograms of Levo, T4, and 10 micrograms of Lyo, T3. My question, how long until I start to feel a difference? This is a great, great question, Brittany, because it has so many different answers to it. And I know that's a very common question on many people's minds who start on T3. So here's the thing. Number one, I don't know if 10 micrograms is going to be enough to treat your symptoms or to optimize you. I very rarely see someone optimize on 10. I just had a question today from a colleague that said, what's the average dose of T3? And I said, it can vary from 25 micrograms to 150 micrograms. So, but I would say the bottom limit, I rarely see anyone optimize under 20 micrograms per day. So I would try to push that to 10 micrograms twice a day if I were you. But at the same time, you want to, you know, go by how you feel, and you have to monitor your heart rate and all that. And you want to go really slow when you're increasing your T3. Now, is the 75 micrograms Levo going to make it? I don't know, because what if your reverse T3 is high? So you can put in all the T3 you want. Well, I mean, to a point, after a certain point, the T3 is going to start pushing down the reverse. But if you're on a boatload of T4 and that's converting reverse T3, or you're not even on a boatload, you're only on 75. But what if you don't convert well and it's pushing up your reverse T3? Then you're not going to see results, because your body's going to stay in survival mode. You will not see results. You just won't. So I'm sorry to say that, but you know, you're going to have to test and give it more time, but most likely go up in the T3 for sure. And last question, this is a big one. Can you explain, this is from Nicole, can you explain again, if there is ever a concern for low TSH when on T4 and T3, 53, postmenopausal, and have had Hashi for 25 years. Okay, girl. Let me read a little bit more of hers, because it's pertinent. She's using estradiol patch. She's taking oral progesterone. Good job. She has osteoporosis. T score for the hip is 2.6. Even though my TSH is low, free T4 and free T3 are low normal, and I have hyposymptoms, so you need more. I'm so afraid that low suppressed TSH will make my bone density worse. It won't. It won't, it won't, it won't. So here's the thing. Anytime you add in any amount of T3, tiny amount of T3, you will decrease your TSH. That's how the body works. That's the natural suppression. So you can't be concerned about that. And I hope you're working with a doctor who knows that and isn't freaked out by your TSH as well. If you have low T4, I don't care. I want you to check the reverse T3. You didn't put in there what your reverse is. If you have a low free T3, then that's a problem. We need to address that with increased medication. But guess what? The increased T3 medication is going to push that TSH down even further. But there is no correlation with bone density unless you are severely elderly and we had you on a large amount of T3 and you're not taking in protein or magnesium or vitamin D paired with K. You're not doing weight bearing exercises. I mean, if you're just basically sitting around doing nothing and you're older, then that can be a problem. But if you are your age, you're taking estradiol, which is totally bone protective, that's fantastic. Make sure you're taking magnesium, D with K, eating enough protein, lifting heavy shit, doing weight bearing exercises, and you will be totally fine. I am on 150 micrograms of T3. My TSH has been suppressed for 25 years. And I did a DEXA scan last year and my bones are awesome. So osteoporosis is also very genetic. So you have to look at those factors as well and not shortchange you and deal with hyposymptoms, because you maybe kind of sort of maybe might protect your bone, but you're probably really not going to. You're just literally avoiding something that could help you to avoid something that isn't in existence. Does that make sense? There's no concern. There is no concern. All right, you guys, I got to sign off. I can do this all day, but we'll break this up. We'll do a couple of them. Keep asking your questions in the Girl Fix Your Thyroid Facebook group. And listeners, if you're not in it, go join it. That's where you get to ask the questions that I answer on here. All right, love you all. Hey guys, thank you so much for listening to the podcast. I hope you loved it. And as always, if you would be so kind to leave a review, if you are listening on Apple Podcasts, that would be absolutely amazing. I read all of them. Also, anything that you hear on this podcast is not intended to diagnose or treat any kind of medical condition. So we always recommend that you check with your medical provider, your doctor, your nurse practitioner before implementing anything that you hear on this podcast. And if you want to find out more about working together, you can click the link below in the show notes to book a discovery call. And there you'll be talking to a member of my team. They are an extension of me. They are amazing. And you and I will talk after that once we get you all signed up and you and I get to work together. All right. I hope to see you soon.